about people who are confident in themselves, who have some understanding that they're in a society that's not going to imprison them if they do this.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Gary Knowles. I'm a professor at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education, and I'm a faculty member in the Department of Adult Education and Counseling Psychology, and I specifically work in the Adult Education Program. I've been exploring home education as a researching topic for something like 24, 25, somewhere in there, years after home educating my two eldest children in a very remote context in the South Pacific and later home educating in the early 90s, my youngest son. So I have a history of involvement with home education that goes back to the mid-late 70s.
My name is Nathalie Zernedden, and I'm a doctoral student at OISE in the Adult Education Department. And I'm in my second year, and I'm working on a life history of a Canadian woman who is committed to advancing alternatives to formal school. And I don't, of course, have the history that Gary has in home education. However, in one sense, I more or less home educated myself, where I withdrew myself from the public school system at a very young age and did not return until my late 20s to university to get a formal education. So I have personal experience in one way, and my academic interests are about supporting this form of education as well.
Is it true to say that homeschooling is on the increase?
Sure. I mean, home education has increased dramatically across North America and around the world, particularly in Western countries, over the last 3 decades. And there's been sort of an exponential growth, in certainly in North America. And that's a result of a whole lot of complex reasons, some that are, you know, very secular, some that have to do with pedagogy and curriculum, and others that have to do with religious and what are seen to be as moral education. So the growth in the last 10 years, I think particularly, has come at the hand of interested evangelical and conservative Christians.
Natalie, do you want to comment on that?
Well, it seems that from the work that I've also been doing at school and other colleagues of mine that have been working in this field as well, I would add that it's on the increase in general, and despite the movement in the United States of the evangelical, I think that certainly even from Wendy's experience, Wendy's a woman that I'm working with as well, it seems that just generally that there's an increase because it's becoming more prevalent, and people are gaining a better understanding of the possibilities of furthering post-secondary education without a formal school background, I think that's making other possibilities, well, possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
that there are more people just getting involved in home education.
So the growth is pretty considerable, and of course it's often swelled by things like teacher strikes or major issues of contention that arise in school boards, or events that happen from time to time. The last series of strikes that we had by teachers in Ontario, for example, brought about huge increases in home educating parents.
Now, let's talk about who homeschools.
Well, you know, it's really, really difficult to kind of nail this in, with some concrete, concise statement. People right across the spectrum, society at all levels, home educate, and they do it for different reasons. My experience would suggest that, you know, even homeless people home educate. They may not have homes, but they educate in the manner of taking charge of their kids' education. And we find that people with very meager resources, you know, go to great pains to provide a home educating environment for their children. And then, you know, people with great numbers of resources will home educate. But we find people who are wealthy, people who are just barely eking out an existence, people that are comfortable, and of course people who are very, very well educated. So if you were to go to the University of Toronto, where I work, you know, we could rustle up quite a few professors who are home educating their children. So it's just a cross-section of society.
I agree, but I think it's also important to say that it is something that is still, for the most part, I mean, I would say privilege-based. And what that means is that it's still predominantly white and, you know, that are somewhat more financially able to at least consistently provide that for their children. There's what I've come to know and understand is that the less privileged, economically privileged, certainly have a desire, but sometimes cannot sustain it for as long as that they would like to. So I think that that's a bit of a problem. But that's also illustrative of how our, you know, socioeconomic situation is set up. But I think it's still predominantly privileged.
I think, really, I would perhaps add that it's more than just privilege, though. It's also because there are lots of privileged people who are unable to take make the decision to take charge. It's about people who are confident in themselves, who have some understanding that they're in a society that's not going to imprison them if they do this.
Right.
So new immigrants, for example, are less likely to think about this because they have a whole set of values that are associated with coming to a new country where education is free and they have particular goals of educating that are institutionally based. So I agree with what Natalie has said, although Natalie would emphasize the privilege part more than I would because, you know, I have seen people who are indeed not very privileged as our society goes, but you're right, in a sense it is, the bulk is white, but the bulk of our society is white. Still.
And then I would add another element to the, you know, to what Gary's just said as well, is that that the people that do engage with this, particularly the ones that are not Christian based, that do this for out of a particular life philosophy, it's something that's all encompassing. They don't just provide this kind of home education to their children, but it's a philosophy that informs everything they do in life. So they would challenge pretty much whatever the status quo is.
Another point to add to this list of things that we're saying, I think, is that it's often more difficult in high-density urban spaces to home educate, although it does go on there. I think proportionally there's probably more people in suburbia and rural areas who are home educating.
Why would that be? I'm wondering.
Well, I think there are very intense pressures of people living in expensive downtown urban areas. You know, the resources are gobbled up a lot more quickly. And, you know, if you're able to produce your own food, you know, large gardens or have some other space for entrepreneurial activities, then, you know, you might find a way of home educating. I mean, there is a predominance of home educators who run their own small businesses. And I think in a general way, it's much easier to have children participating in those business operations and business interests in suburbia than it is in rural context than it is in urban context.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think that one of the key things here is that these people are also see themselves as being independent and resourceful, although not all of them are, and you know there are various levels of independence and various levels of how home educators actually think through and philosophize about what it is they're doing and why they're doing it. But you know, by and large, they do see themselves as having, you know, independent streaks, if you like.
And financially, I think that it's easier for them to adjust, economically speaking, if they decide to go down to a one income earner in the family, whereas in urban areas such as Toronto, that's not to say that there are no homeschoolers there, but I think for the parents to make that decision, because they've come to rely so much on an external economic system and one that offers a so-called stability or assurance, it then becomes a bit more challenging for the parents to they may perceive it as really relinquishing on something for their children, mm-hmm. because it's more costly to live downtown. There's more distractions. It becomes more difficult or more challenging to find methods of entertainment that are more self-directed and not cost-oriented, whereas in semi-rural areas, I think it's a bit easier.
We are talking thus far as though the only people who do this are traditional nuclear families. But in fact, there are a considerable number of single parents who are home educating. And there are even, you know, of course, I don't know of any personally, but I have heard of, you know, same-sex couples also home educating. So, you know, while it's far, far more difficult to be a single parent and home educate than to have a two-parent family, you know, I do have intimate knowledge of single women in very oppressed contexts home educating as well. But again, it's a particular courage, and in one particular case I can think of, it was, you know, a result of people being absolutely fed up with the oppression that they felt at the hand of school boards or school districts, as in the US, and were trying to bring their children out of poverty, as it were, because they were poverty stricken.
Listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
And do you find that parents, like, they usually stick with home-based education, or do they? Would you say that might give up, or if it's they can't do it, you know, like, they quit?
Well, you know, there are many people who do it, who begin home educating, and they last for a short period of time, be it months or a year or so. And there are others that burn out after, you know, 2 or 3 years. You know, perhaps they feel that they get to a level where they can't sort of, well, they have a particular conception of teaching that rests on them, you know, being the ones who are the font of all knowledge, if you like, and that they feel a particular burden and inability to proceed past certain levels of subject matter. And those people, you know, drop out pretty quickly, maybe after a year, 2 or 3. But those who have, I think, pedagogies that allow for, and they have personalities that allow for a relaxed and ongoing, you know, perseverance of this role that they've taken on, and who see themselves as guides and facilitators rather than, you know, the expert in all subject areas, they're able to continue, and some just keep on going, you know, 1 year at a time, and all of a sudden they find that, you know, they've home educated the kid from kindergarten through to high school, and then they think, oh yeah, well, that wasn't too bad, well, then I'll carry on with high school, and they do. So, you know, I think depending on how you conceptualize your role as guiding parent or as parent teacher, you know, you will either burn out or you'll find some sort of equilibrium and be able to continue. And I think those people who are able to use the breadth and depth of communities and the resources around them, those are the ones who are able to really sustain, you know, longevity to this practice.
I think we're forgetting one small element, the choice also of the youth. You know, that we're focusing here on the parents, mm-hmm, whether they stick with it. I think, sure, they can choose, you know, to stick with it. But then, of course, the child, youth in question may decide, okay, it's time for me to go and explore this. I want to go and see what it is that I've not been part of. I want to understand. I want to use it to help me understand a particular popular culture of education that I don't get, I'm not part of. So I just wanted to say that there's also the kids involved that make those decisions.
Yeah, but we also have to remember, Natalie, that not all families would allow that decision to be made. I mean, many would, but not all. For a good number of families, it is a parental decision. And for some families, they would allow the child to make that decision.
And I think that is about also the philosophy of home education.
You're right, sure.
And, you know, just to use some terminology here around the pedagogue and
ideologue.
So
those two terms denote in somewhat the emphasis on creative teaching practices and curriculum development by parents, or their emphasis on a particular ideology, philosophy, religious perspective.
Mm-hmm. And so depending, I would interpret more, a parent guide would fall more under a pedagogue.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. So if you've got more of a parent guide, I think that they certainly would be more open to the decision, to the kids making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas someone that comes perhaps a more Christian background and does it for moral purposes, I doubt that the children would have that kind of freedom, but I could be wrong.
And in your research, though, do you find, the children, from the children's perspective, do they ever, say maybe there's too much time at home with mom or...
I think in some context there is an ongoing battle. Mm-hmm. And so that's one good reason why parents, stop doing this, because in fact there becomes this battle between the parent and the child. But in the bulk of people, home educating, and bulk of families, you reach some sort of equilibrium, if you like. Mm-hmm. So you start out in a particular way, and you find that things work or don't work, and you change your practices, and the parent with the courage and the wisdom and the confidence will soon, adapt and modify his or her practices or demands or goals or ideals as they find themselves in the situation. And, I hear many, many families that sort of say, we started out really, really structured and we just really replicated, what goes on in school. And very soon, we found ourselves doing other things, relying more on community, moving out of the home, and not having this tight structure, not having, periods or bells or desks or flags or whatever it is that people do that they think is like a school. Because in fact, there are many, many people who really start out and replicate the context of schools.
Natalie, do you have anything to add?
Well, I support what Gary is saying, and I think that from a societal perspective, our assumptions are about education are so deeply ingrained that even people that have a very open philosophy about education struggle with the idea of what I should do and at what age should I teach my child to read, and is it okay to rely on the self-directedness of the child. It challenges many fundamental assumptions that we have about the concept of education.
Roll call! Come along now, you have a late for parade! Rip, 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 car!
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Discipline!
On CFMU.
How about the whole idea of achievement? Like, people question, people who might be thinking of home-based education might think, well, how can my child achieve, right, in the sense of, like, get a well-paid job and stuff like that? Do you have any comments on that?
Do you have any comments, Natalie?
Well, I think that's such a big question. And it is something that comes up, and it's a way also, I read that question as illustrating how we're socialized, one, to see success, two, how it's related to finances. And that's not to undermine the importance of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that home-educated kids become, you know, reasonable adults, and that, you know, the holding the kinds of values that are, you know, that might be similar to their parents. But we know that happens in all different kinds of contexts. We also have a fair sense that many of the home-educated children grow up to be individuals that are fairly autonomous, that somewhat independent and not terribly easily influenced by peers. There's also evidence to suggest that many of them become entrepreneurs or autonomous in the workplace, and so that they work for themselves or work for a small company or set up business. So there's a certain resourcefulness, I think, associated with many. There's lots of evidence that home-educated kids get into universities or community colleges or other training facilities or workplace training facilities, and that they do that generally achieve reasonably well. My sense is that there are some caveats, or I have some caveats about what success might mean, and certainly I get very tired of hearing home-educated parents saying how well their children do compared to public school children. Because in fact those kinds of comparisons are not helpful at all. What, you know, if I'm living in a neighborhood or an area, a more useful comparison of how well my children are doing scholastically would be, for example, if I was to compare the progress of my neighbor's children and my neighbor's children that live in the same vicinity. And public schools, we know, work for the public good in that they do have to address the needs of a very wide spectrum of children. And we know that it's difficult to meet everybody's needs, and that many kids, you know, come to school very troubled and have all kinds of issues and problems and difficulties to face. And test scores are brought down by the fact that, you know, there are children with low IQs, children who are developmentally challenged, or children that are in abusive situations. All those things mitigate against a child performing well in a public school. And home educators make comparisons to the averages, to the means of public school performance. And that's totally inappropriate. Mm. We ought to be comparing the performance scholastically, and I'm not sure I don't personally agree with the kind of measures that are typically touted as being appropriate, but it's more useful to us to compare neighbours or, you know, children in the neighbourhood rather than children at public schools. Mm-hmm. So the claims made by home-educated parents are kind of overstated, and I'm not disparaging the fact that, you know, there's many wonderful things go on in some home-educating families,
and that some of those things point to home-educated children having a strong sense of self, certainly are self-directed, and that are quite resourceful, and that based on those qualities, characteristics, it is also what helps them enter post-secondary education or get jobs that they want as well, because they've developed certain traits that point to a different form of strength that is not necessarily based on scholastic success, academic success per se, but on something else that's more relationship based, perhaps.
Well, actually, on that topic of post-secondaries, unless you want to add another comment here, I was just wondering how difficult it is to get into a post-secondary for a person who hasn't gone to high school.
Well, of course, you know, don't forget that most institutions are willing to accept students of a mature age, so usually over 21, or it might, in some cases, it might be less than that. So usually the requirement is that they've finished the equivalent of year 12. I think there are some institutions who have opened up and others that haven't. My sense is that people are able to get the kind of education that they aspire to. So, you know, I know that there are institutions where it's difficult, but I also know of institutions and that are actively working at trying to develop, you know, rationales and policies about this very thing. Often smaller regional institutions are a little more open than, say, for example, in Canada, larger research institutions. But we know that institutions like, say, Harvard have been particularly impressed with their home educated students who have done reasonably well. And I think one of the things that home education does do is it prepares people to be independent and to be self-directed in their learning at university. So I've heard a lot more success stories than I have of stories of marginal performance by home education, if you like, home education graduates. So, you know, and of course there are a number of institutions who caught, or which caught, you know, home educated students.
Like what?
Some of those, sorry?
Like, can you...
Well, some of those are religious-based institutions. Uh-huh. You know, like, for example, in the US, Bob Jones University. And, you know, there are, I think, I don't want to be quoted here, but so I'm not going to mention specific names, but there are institutions in Canada that I think are more open to home-educated children.
And there are different ways of entering as well. I think that a kid who is a kid, and here I'm talking about someone who's ready to go to university, but who has a good sense of self, is able to negotiate with the system, and that there are different ways, a letter of intent, a portfolio that the student can put together, and an interview that may compensate for some other requirements.
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.